Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
So, Matt, to address the elephant in the room, which Paul brought up earlier, is this more undiscovered country, Wrath of Khan? Where do you fall? give us the Rosetta translation here.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, the Chaos Edition. We're going to be talking Rogue One with as many of the giant-sized team-up network hosts as we can get. I'm the Rock Guy Podcasting, Charles McFall. And for Breaking the Panel, we got Chris Wisdom.
Hey, yo.
We got Paul Klotz.
Yo.
And joining us from the network, that is giant-sized team-up, giantsizedteamup.com. We got some awesome people. You already know Jeff Randall and Matt Carroll from MCU Cast.
Yo.
What's up, everybody?
And brand new to the team, we've got the Botched D&D Podcast. They just joined the network, and we've got Dennis.
Hey-o.
And Phil.
What's up, nerds?
All right. And if you haven't checked it out, man, Botched is a great, great podcast. It even if you know nothing about D&D, like I know nothing about D&D, it cracks me up. It's so much fun. You guys do a great job over there.
Thank you.
Technically, we don't know much about D&D either.
But it's a blast. And if you need anything covered from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, of course, we've got those awesome guys, Jeff and Matt. You guys been, you lost Agent Carter, so I guess you're just not quite as busy as your brothers over at DC On Screen now.
We're going to talk about Slingshot here soon, and then our show comes back next week. And then every 2 months, we have new content. This upcoming year, so it's going to be a really crazy year.
It's going to be good. And Jeff, I don't know if we want to throw this out there, but you had toyed with an idea of a mini podcast to go along with it.
Yeah, well, along with it or just wildly independent. I'm thinking more wildly independent.
So there's going to be some more content coming out of there. And Matt, you wrote some songs recently.
I did, man. Working on an album for this year, so before we get into the actual recording process, I'm trying to just write as many new songs as possible. So I took 3 days off this week and just wrote all day and came out with like eight new pretty solid songs this week. So like the most songs I've written this year. So it was exciting. And I'm actually going to go on another songwriting retreat next month, where I'm just going to go away for 4 days and just live in a cabin and write songs. So
I was gonna say, try to come back with a giant beard.
You're gonna grow like a giant beard and get your gray Jedi robes, and then some strange girl's gonna come and point a lightsaber at you.
It's gonna be guitar.
Yeah.
That's how you're gonna know when it's time to come back, right?
Like, after 4 days, that's exactly what's gonna happen.
And is that peyote or acid? What are the materials used?
I haven't decided yet, but something for some songwriting fuel, I guess.
I just really picture something more along Reno 911 when he says he's going on a retreat. He's going to lock himself in his closet with a couple of bottles of Jack Daniels and see what it comes out with. So that
I did one of the days this week. I've never really tried to write on substances, but I just like decided to get really drunk and try to write one of the nights. And I was not as productive as I'd hoped.
I ended up just getting drunk and playing PlayStation VR all night.
Now, before we get started, we want to tell everybody, of course, you can find out more of these podcasts at their websites. We got MCUcast.com. We got, is it botch.com?
Botchpodcast.com.
And we are getting a page put up very quickly on the Giant Size Team Up Network. They'll have everybody's contacts and ways to support them through Patreon and donations and everything else. You can do that as well. You can email us here at btp@giantsizedteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel. And, of course, you've got the Patreon, you've got the Facebook, the Twitter, all that jazz. But we're going to jump right into it. We're going to be doing a spoiler-free and spoiler-filled Rogue One coverage. But before that, Klotz, I won't throw Klotz under the bus. Who wants to cover the news that broke today?
Well, no,
nobody wants to cover it.
All right, I'll cover it. Apparently, I'm a heartless person because I'm not teary-eyed like you geeks are. I don't understand. But Carrie Fisher did pass away today at the age of 60. Is it 60 even?
60. I think it's 60 flat.
60 flat. There you go. From a massive heart attack. Of course, I don't know if you had been following the news, but that happened over the weekend, right before Christmas, actually. I think a day or two before Christmas.
On the 23rd, yeah.
Yeah, she was on an airplane, had a massive coronary event, which is that is the big one. They call it a massive coronary event. That is where your heart really stops beating, and they had to use all kind of invasive procedures to save your life. And fortunately, apparently, she never pulled out of whatever happened and passed away. I know there's a lot of sadness going around. And Klaus, you didn't want to do the show tonight because we're going to be talking Star Wars.
I meant that facetiously.
I figured you're crying into your beard, and it's okay. It's okay. You have a safe space here.
I don't know if it's very polite to make fun of me for being sad that Carrie Fisher died.
Yeah, it's not. Wait
a minute. I did record the pre-show where all you guys did was give me grief every step of the way. And out of all the things that Klotz does to me on the show, it's not very polite.
Yeah, but you're just kind of like poo-pooing all over the death of an icon. Like, you kind of being a dick.
An icon.
What?
Oh, whoa. Come on.
Whoa. Charles, this show is over.
Wow.
We're done. All right. Thanks for showing up, folks.
Phil doesn't know if she's an icon or not, but he knows he's never opened up one of her movies.
What is she in again?
That's an inside joke from Botched, where Phil's never seen any of the movies he's owned, apparently. Because, guys, not everybody's heard that show. They don't always know the inside jokes, Chris. They're not stalkers like you. So, does anybody want to talk about it? Do you want to talk about your favorite memories, or should we move on to the Rogue One coverage?
Well, I would like to take a moment to refute your assessment that she's not very iconic. Just to point out that for a lot of folks, Carrie Fisher was one of the first strong, empowered females that they saw in media, especially in a genre that wasn't necessarily known for it at the time. Because, I mean, 70s and 80s sci-fi was kind of rough on the female empowerment front. I mean, and she's legendary, obviously, for Return of the Jedi, the Golden Bikini, but
Jabba.
Well, yeah, the thing that a lot of people miss about that is through all three Star Trek films, original films, she was always...
Star Wars.
She's so iconic, you got it wrong.
It is blasphemy.
This podcast is over. Thanks for showing up, everybody.
I'll have to cut that out in post. I'm going to have to send like bribe money to Mike now.
This is like Weasley's, but worse.
All three Star Wars films, more importantly than if I can remember if it's Trek or Wars, she was an icon for a lot of people, especially young women. And she was, you know, a badass who didn't take no guff, who even when she was in that crazy bikini, she took the first opportunity to choke the heck out of that giant slug and fight for her own freedom. So, I mean, she's obviously Carrie Fisher wasn't the role and the role wasn't her, but she meant a lot to a lot of people. And as a person, Carrie Fisher in her day-to-day life, she suffered some mental health issues, and she was very prolific in talking about it and bringing exposure to it and, you know, letting people kind of know that, you know, a lot of people go through some stuff sometimes and that there is, you know, there's help out there for the people who need it, and that there's no reason to look down on somebody for their struggles. So that's something I've always appreciated about her. And quite frankly, I've appreciated some of the comedy she's explored in recent years. Most recently, I saw her on Legit, the Jim Jeffries show that was around for a couple of years. She does a bit part on that. She's super funny. It's really over the top and just really over the top, but she's fantastic, and it's a real shame that she's gone. So, you know, thank you for all the memories to her, and some love going out to everybody who's feeling a little bit rocked by this loss. And, you know, screw you, Charles, because you're a dick.
We love her. She knows.
Absolutely.
All right. So here is Rogue One. Did you know it's called A Star Wars Story? I didn't realize that was the subtitle.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Did we really need that? I mean, this day and age, do we really need it branded like that?
Yes.
I think yes. So. Mm-hmm. I bet Disney would think so as well.
Well, yeah, obviously they did it. But I mean, how do we not know it's not, you know, how do we not know it's Star? I mean, you look at it, you know it's Star Wars.
Well, Charles.
Everyone on this podcast knows, but there's a lot of people out there who aren't as involved. And there's a lot of people who still didn't even understand where it fit in the timeline, even going to see it. We're like, so this is after episode 7, right? Like, there were a lot of people that still didn't understand what was going on. And that's just, you know, the nature of not everyone is as obsessed as we are.
Yeah.
The franchise is no Rogue One
means Star Wars.
You don't have to know, but you look at it. It screams, the artwork screams Star Wars on the poster. There's lightsabers.
It can be Star Wars, but like, I've had to explain to so many people over the past couple of weeks that, like, no, this fits after 3, but before 4, kind of right butted up against 4. And they're like, how? Like, well, you know, the scrolling text at the beginning of 4, it's
this is that.
That's the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're like, whoa.
Well, I mean, I know we're in the non-spoiler section of the show right now.
Right, right.
But you just touched on some major controversy, my friend.
We'll get okay. there.
The fact that there is no scrolling text.
It is the scroll. You don't need a scroll, just like we don't need another.
I know.
There's no trilogy here because it is. The sequel's already been done. Oh, my God. I want to pull my hair out.
I love that that the public will complain about literally anything, and that is something that I see over and over again. Why is there no scroll? What the heck?
It's because the scrolls were the saga films.
Well, to be fair, it, to me, as growing up with Star Wars, it's I already had to deal with it in TFA, no Fox fanfare. So then you go, no Fox fanfare, and you have no scroll. For the first minute and a half of the movie, I'm like, what am I in? I don't know what I'm seeing because I don't have any fanfare. I don't have any scroll. But I don't know. To me, it's their reasoning for not doing the scroll was weak at best. They said it's not a part of the Skywalker saga. Well, there's nothing saying that the Skywalker saga is what delineated the scroll. If you look back to the reason they did the scroll, its origins harken back to those 1930s serials. So there's just because a 1930s serial wasn't a part of another 1930s serial you were seeing didn't mean that it didn't have a scroll. And if you were trying to separate it so much from Star Wars, why were those two in it? Why were the droids in it? Why did you force C-3PO and R2-D2 down my throat when you're trying to say this isn't a part of the
I would say that them saying the whole thing about it not being part of the saga and that's why, that's an excuse. I think the real reason is it's artistic license, and this particular director thought his film would be better without it. And so maybe other directors in the future won't feel that way, or maybe they kind of have to stick with it now that they've gone that way. But I don't know. Like, it seemed to me like just we don't want to start our movie with a bunch of text. That's the way they did things in the 80s, you know, this director didn't want to do that, you know?
I think it's more just that they want to, like, only do the scroll for the main saga films. Because, you know, they're the ones that are labeled episode 4, episode, mm-hmm. you know, so on and so forth. So I think their idea is saying that they want to clearly delineate these are the core films, this is the main story, and then all the side stuff is just a little different. And it's like when you read a full-length novel, you'll read the intro, the introduction section, and that'll get you caught up to speed, but you're not going to read that for a short story. And that's very much what these side films really are, is kind of your short stories that flesh out the world for people who are, you know, willing to lob their money via catapult at Disney. So, you know, which we are.
And I was going to say, from a storytelling standpoint, originally you needed the scroll because you jumped, when they made it, he made number 4 first. So he jumps right in the middle. So you need a scroll to set up where you're picking up in the story, right? And then every other film, there's time gaps that are being jumped. So it's saying, hey, this stuff happened that we're not going to show you. And it's just a living, breathing story. Like, hey, you looked at it at this point in time. That's what you see. So here the scroll is. Here's what you missed. This is the scroll for episode 4. We don't need a scroll. It literally, he just got pulled out of the damn fire. And boom, we're in Rogue One. That's it.
But that's not really what happened, though. That's not literally what happened, because him getting out of the fire was a good 10 to 15 years.
Was he just getting a facial there in the movie when you saw him?
No, that's just him. That's just him recuperating. That's just what he does in his castle.
Yeah, this is like that's 15 healing. Or 20 years later.
Yeah.
In his castle, is he Dracula now?
Oh, Charles.
Yeah.
You still haven't let me read the numbers.
Please don't be the voice of continuity in this group.
I never tried to be. I'm saying, who needs that? Who needs a scroll? In the last 15 years, Darth Vader has opened up a Redbox account, canceled his Netflix because he does not like to chill. You're a Skrull. Shut up.
But which way is it? They needed a Skrull because there was a time gap, or they don't need a Skrull because in the time gap, the only thing he did is go to Redbox. Which is it, Charles? Which way would you like it?
Martha. So moving on. That's my safe word now. All right. So it's a $200 million budget to make this film. So far, domestic has grossed $318 million, and foreign has grossed $255 million, bringing it to $573 million so far. What are we, three weeks out? Have we had 3 weekends yet? Is this?
I think this will be week two, won't it?
So we've only had 2 weekends.
Week two. Yeah.
Okay.
We're coming into week three.
Gotcha. So that's actually pretty decent money for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
This movie's going to make a boatload of money. Like, I mean, I don't.
Will it break a billion, you think?
Yes.
Probably.
Okay.
Yes.
If you include international, yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious about it because it's not. I loved it. I really did. But it's not as much fun as Force Awakens. Not as much fun as a lot of the Star Wars stuff. Like it's a lot more serious of a movie. And
it's
to
totally
me,
darker.
Those don't have as much rewatchability in general for most people. Most audiences, they want to go to the movie that made them feel great. And I think this movie does, even with, you know,
well, you might not be able to get as wide an audience because, you know, if it is darker, it's not going to be, you know, as accessible to like small children, things like that.
For right. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I remember I went Thursday, you know, the
opening night, is what you're saying.
The opening night, yeah. You know, quote right. Unquote, because, you know, they don't do the midnight thing as much anymore. But I went Thursday, and I recall a lot of people posting online and saying, hey, listen, this is not necessarily a kids-friendly movie. Like, don't.
Just screen this before taking your kids to see it.
Yeah, go see it as a, you know, as an adult amongst adults before you drag your 5-year-old along, because this is a heavy movie, and then that absolutely is. So if you're listening to this at home and you're deciding whether you want to swing out and bring the kids, this is a war film. Like, make no mistake, it's Star Wars, and it's got jokes, and it, you know, it's got feel goods and feel bads, but it's a war film. It's gritty. It's dark. It's heavy. You're gonna cry. If you have a heart, you're gonna cry. I mean, Charles probably didn't.
I'll explain why Phil and I didn't cry.
He probably cheered. Charles is not at all one with the Force, and the Force definitely not with him.
Well, it's not in me either.
Yeah. That's good. But yeah, no, it's a heavy movie. Now, the funny thing about that is, I recall a lot of people going to re-see Episode 7. I'm seeing a lot of people see this 2 or 3 times or more, actually, at least in my circle of people. For some reason, there's something about this film that's just dragging them back out again. I've seen it twice already, and I know a bunch of other people who are like, I commented that I was going to see it the second time, and some of my friends were like, oh, we're going to our third viewing today. And that was on Christmas, so it was like, wow, okay. Yeah, so I don't know. It's really the rewatchability factor is going to be a really interesting thing to see how that plays out going forward, because obviously it doesn't have the same exposure to a wide audience.
It doesn't, but this. Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, on my second viewing, I took the girlfriend and her 8- and 9-year-old kids to see it, and they loved it. But then again, they're avid Star Wars fans that I can actually have a halfway decent conversation with him, be like, all right, guys, you know, this kind of thing is not the way you should do things.
Well, let's jump into it. We'll get into everything that we're hinting at.
Yeah.
All right. So I think the quickest thing we can do for non-spoiler is just give our walkaway impressions, you know, a 1 to 5 rating or whatever. And then now we'll talk details. Because here's the thing with this kind of movie. It's either or, right? You're going to go see it because it's Star Wars, or you're not going to go see it at all. So there's not really a whole lot of non-spoiler we can talk about that. I go, oh, yeah, I guess I'll go see it. It's freaking Star Wars. Either see it or don't. Shut up. So we'll start with Phil. Walking away, what were your impressions of the movie? What's your rating?
3.5, maybe pushing 4.
Compared to what would be a 5? What would be a 5? Since we don't really know you on this show yet, what would be a 5 for you?
If they could have taken out a lot of things from this, and it would have been a 5. The Darth Vader dad joke in the middle of it really took me out of the film. And the shootaways to C-3PO R2 annoyed me, and also Blue Milk and the two rough and tumbly dudes from the cantina.
No, I like that, actually. I saw them. Oh, hey. Kind of puts a close to a timeline on it, almost.
Just the Darth Vader choke on your admirations line. I almost got Irish and walked out. Completely out of character, would never say it. I groaned. I physically groaned in the theater.
I can attest. I was sitting next to him.
To that right. line.
He Picard facepalmed immediately.
So you give it a 3.5, maybe a 4. You enjoyed it. Would you see it a second time?
I wanted to see more of the war scene on the final beach island. I know there was a lot of things that they cut out from things that were in the trailer that actually weren't in the movie. But overall, I'll definitely see it again, and I will be purchasing it when it comes out on Blu-ray, but not watching it when I finally purchase it.
You'll be keeping it in that pristine.
Yeah, mint on card.
Dennis, what about you?
I would probably give it somewhere between a 3, 3.5 stars for me out of 5. I mean, I would definitely say go see it. I enjoyed it. I just didn't love it quite the same way as I did Force Awakens. I like that a lot more. Some of the similar reasons to Phil, the Darth Vader dad joke was a little weird. I didn't mind all of the callbacks, but some of the callbacks were unnecessary, like the R2-D2 one. There were some graphical things that bothered me. There was a lot of character development problems that I thought existed in the movie. Couple scenes could have been cut from the movie. Some other ones could have been, you know, brought out, that sort of thing. And, you know, we'll talk about that more in the spoiler section, but
I will like to add as well. And I do believe I'm the only person in America on this option or this opinion, but I could not stand K2SO. Yeah. And I know I'm going to take heat from it. I will give you my Twitter handle so you can give me all your heat on it, but I could not stand every time he opened up his droid mouth.
No, you know what? Your all Twitter right. handle will not make an appearance because we will not give you the press. No.
All right.
He was awful.
But there were a lot of things I liked about the movie too. So, but that's what I'm saying. I'm giving it 3, 3.5. It could have been a lot better is what I'm saying, but I still like the movie a lot. So definitely go see it.
Chris, what do you got to say?
Well, I think it's appropriate that our rating system is 1 to 5 because I think episode 5 is the one where this one really comes to the level with. So I'm going to give it a 5 because I think it's every bit the movie that Empire Strikes Back was. I had little issues, but they were pretty nitpicky as far as, I mean, the C-3PO R2-D2 forced down my throat. The Vader dad joke, yeah, was it bad? I don't think it was enough to not make this one of the top Star Wars movies I've ever seen. This is easily number 2 to me in ranking for me. I understand everybody's issue with the down ending, but the rewatchability of it. I mean, how many people list Empire as their top favorite Star Wars movie? And that's the ultimate down ending. That is the measuring stick by which sequels are judged. And
all
that's
life
what this
is,
movie was.
A series of down, down endings.
Exactly. And I don't necessarily look at it as just a down ending. I mean, this is that final sacrifice. This is what the rebellion is about. This all is right. about going. That,
you're towing the line. So let's. You liked it. You gave it a 5. We'll get you there.
We're clearly all towing this line pretty hard.
So let's get this. Jeff, what was your feeling of walkout?
Not being in the MCU. It had to drop a star at least. So. I'd give this one a solid 4.5 out of 5, only because I'm leaving room for going up, because this one was definitely top tier Star Wars for me. And if they keep making it this level, I'm going to have to adjust it to be like, yeah, this one's definitely 4.75. That extra quarter of a star, it would be if they dropped it in the MCU. but the, you know, the callbacks.
Choice.
I know, right? It's just the expansive galactic universe. You know, you got Guardians of the Galaxy and then a little farther out, there's Star Wars. Yeah. It's fine. Makes sense. I can get this.
Further in the past.
Yeah. Anyway, all the callbacks of, you know, the blue milk and all the little things that you see that are like, oh, that's from that other one. Like, I love those. The only one I didn't like was, like everyone else, the R2 and C-3PO kind of squeeze in bit. I'm going to have to vehemently disagree with Philip on K2SO.
All right.
I knew
I'm very disappointed.
Just like
your lack of love of K2 is disturbing.
So, all right, Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I'd probably give it a 4, but I would probably I guess I should explain my role, my place in Star Wars. I'm not a Star Wars fan. I think it's fine, but I've never really been a big fan. And I thought it was the best Star Wars movie I've ever seen, by far. but I'm not a big fan. And those things you guys mentioned that y'all felt were thrown in or out of place, like the blue milk, mm-hmm. the two guys from the cantina, those are things I had no idea about and did not feel forced to me because I didn't even notice them. So I think like they put those things in there for guys like you that will notice them. But it is kind of sad that it didn't feel natural to you guys, because to me, it those things weren't forced at all because I didn't even notice the guys. C-3PO and R2, obviously, I noticed, and that was a little weird. but overall, I just thought it was the best thing Star Wars has ever done, honestly.
Okay.
So Matt, to address the elephant in the room, which Paul brought up earlier, is this more Undiscovered Country, Wrath of Khan? Where do you fall? give us the Rosetta translation here.
Nemesis. Which
Generations.
No, this is definitely not Nemesis. That's the worst. Don't get me started. I will go off on some. It's more DS9 than the others. It's the more adult version, more adult with actual. I don't know. The character development was better. The story was better. I just really loved. I have a lot to say in the spoiler section, but I love what they did with this movie. It really made me feel. I felt more for these characters than I've ever felt for a Star Wars character as an adult. As a kid, I watched him and I was like, swing my lightsaber. I feel like a Jedi. This is awesome. But as an adult, I've never really enjoyed these movies. And this one, it connected with me on an emotional level, which was really cool. I actually found myself crying at one point, and I was like, wow, this got me there, which is cool.
This never happens. I'm so sorry.
I didn't know. It happens a lot. It happens a lot. I'm not hard. I'm not a hard cry, but
ooh.
Yeah.
All right, Klotz. We're gonna move on from this one. It's just going deeper and deeper. Paul Klotz.
God, Charles.
What's your walk away, man?
Deeper and deeper, Charles. Really?
Klotz, what?
All right,
help us out here, man.
Wow. I don't know how to follow that up. I'm with Chris. I give this like a 5, or maybe I'm with Jeff a little bit and give it like a 4.75. This is very much like Empire. It has a similar tone. You know, it's heavy. It's real. It really conveys the grittiness of, you know, the rebellion and what the struggle that they were faced with. You know, the big thing here is that the Galactic Empire is all powerful and oppressive. And they're a ragtag bunch of people just trying to, you know, to fight for some change. And that is something that you very much get from it. I describe this to people who aren't necessarily big Star Wars fans as like, this is your Saving Private Ryan in the Star Wars universe. This is your Band of Brothers. It's a war film. It's a war film that doesn't spend a lot of time like letting you get to know these characters, but you get to know them enough to form a bond with them and form an attachment. And you really feel where they're coming from. So I loved it. It was great. The only reason I give it any wiggle room at all as a rating is because we'll talk about it more in the spoiler section, but you can see some of the cracks and seams of the editing process and some of the reshoots and stuff. And so there's some pacing early in the film, and then there's some other parts that are a little disjointed. But for the most part, I mean, I loved it. I've seen it twice now. It's just amazing. The third act is incredible. The third act is as Star Wars gets. It's got all the drama and all the weight and just everything that I'm getting chills just thinking about it again. It's so good. Fantastic film. Loved it. Highly recommend it to anybody who's a fan of any of the things I've listed thus far, especially Star Trek. If you're into Star Trek, This is possibly the most Star Trek-y of the Star Wars films. No, it's not at all. It's definitely like your Band of Brothers type thing. It's about the struggle. It's about the people. It's about the people at the ground level. I mean, it kind of follows some important figures in the story, but not like we were talking earlier about, it's not one of the main saga films. It's not following the Skywalkers. This is the people in the background that made things happen that led up to the events of the first film. And it was great. And what I've told a lot of people is that this is the film that made me feel stupid for like hemming and hawing when Disney acquired Star Wars. Because I've eaten my words now. I was dubious when they acquired Marvel, and I was dubious when they acquired Star Wars. And since then, they have made me feel like a damn fool. Because they're crushing it. And if this is a sign of what's to come, I am so excited for the next decade worth of probably a new Star Wars every year. I'm beyond excited. So.
Well, that is going to be the end of the non-spoiler. So if you haven't seen it and you want to and have nothing ruined, good luck. We've towed that line. I think we've tripped over that line once or twice here.
There's droids in this film. Sorry. We were on that
bridge. Now, to start off the spoiler part, I would like to address what you said. Some of you guys said were ham-fisted things with R2-D2 and C-3PO. Right? I think that was for the average moving-going audience who maybe aren't as familiar with Star Wars. It goes, my initial response was, hey, oh yeah, this is a reminder that this is just before episode 4. And it is part of the Star Wars canon. Because there's, like you said, there's not a whole lot of iconic Star Wars in here because of the nature of the story. You got the walkers, which were amazing graphics.
You've got Darth Vader. Walkers.
They're walkers. Really, they walk.
Matter. They're not the same walkers.
They're different walkers.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the average freaking viewer. They have four legs and a box and a dog head. They're walkers. All right? They shoot the crap out of you. God, I didn't interrupt yourself, Chris. Shut up.
Let me be simple.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of people who'll go and watch this just because it's a holiday film or Christmas release is what I mean. People are off, out of work, out of school, and they'll go to the theaters and just see stuff. They'll see it because it has a Star Wars label on it, but they don't quite know it. So there's a few simple, hooks in there. Now, I liked it when the two ruffians ran into him in the streets. I thought that was kind of cool. I didn't notice the blue milk at all. And of course, the Darth Vader choking thing, that was a little ham-fisted, but I think they put that in there because that's the meme of Darth Vader, right? That is the internet thing. He chokes everything. That's what our Facebook society has come to expect. It didn't bother me. It didn't add anything to it.
Actually, that out of character for him.
Well, it's not.
I think it was a line.
It's the line. It's not the choking.
It's totally grown worthy, but it's not as if that's not something he's done in the past. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I remember he was screaming "No!" at the end of the episode. It was just as bad. What it does as a whole is it takes a film that is supposed to expand the universe, and it actually shrinks it for me.
Right.
Because, you know, I know going into it that C-3PO and R2-D2 are a thing. I don't need a movie that's trying to expand my horizons and universes to put them in it just to shrink it back down again.
Now, see, that's how I felt about Star Wars Episode 1 when he's building R2-D2. I was like, building C-3PO, I'm sorry. Building C-3PO. Yes. I was like, really?
For me, that's Anakin always built been, him? Yeah, for me, that's always been what's super forced about the prequels, is they're like, look, these droids have been here the whole time, and I'm like, whatever.
But that's the thing, is that, and that's where I take issue with it, because the droids' purpose has always been, they were always intended to be that connective tissue. Through all nine films, they're the
Skywalker saga. It's the C-3PO and
R2-D2. And R2-D2 saga, and that was always their intention. But so when you tell me that this is separate from the saga films, and you make a big deal about it, and you take away my crawl, and you don't even label it as a Star Wars movie, because when you see it on the movie screen, it doesn't say Star Wars anywhere on there. You get that all walking into the theater. It's on all the merchandising outside of the theater, but not in the theater. I take issue with them not being consistent, and then you throw these guys in who are the connective tissue of the nine films, mm-hmm. I get confused at what you're trying to say this film is.
It's fun sci-fi romp that is a dark and gritty.
Well,
and
I wouldn't describe it as a fun sci-fi romp.
There's parts I laughed my. I probably shouldn't have, but there's parts I laughed my butt
there
off.
There is
at.
That. So here, the thing is, the contextually, it makes sense for them to be in the film because these are the events that lead up almost immediately to episode 4. However, if they show up in the Han Solo film that we're getting. That's shooting right now or beginning
that
to shoot right now.
That should be impossible. Technically, that should be impossible.
That is when I will be like, no.
Bridge too tall.
Too much.
Well, let's reset this back to the beginning. The non-scroll, right? I'm going to let you guys talk it out. It did jar me a little bit in the way my theater presented it. It was, here's a trailer. Bam! And we're just, the movie, I'm like, is this a trailer? Are we in the movie? I mean, it physically jarred me for a second that we're in the movie. And then I'm like, okay, I know there's no scroll, but there was like no warning, no nothing. It looked like another commercial. Like, wait, that's the movie. Okay. So it took my mind a second to go from chatting and, oh, cool trailer to shut up. Now it's moving. Let's get into it, which I don't know. It threw me off.
Here's another trailer for a Saturn movie.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it, though, too, is because it didn't use the traditional Star Wars theme and fanfare, that's the other thing is it's because I noticed throughout the whole film, they very carefully avoided, getting too close to the classic Star Wars themes. There's a little taste of it here and there, but the music was separate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can tell that the music was like inspired by Star Wars fanfare. Yeah. But it wasn't quite on the nose.
About the crawl, I would just say that the this movie was supposed to be a more personal story than the other movies. The other movies are about this big galactic empire rise and fall.
Yeah, yeah.
This is about this girl's story, and I think that starting it the opening crawl was her story of as she was a child and her having her father ripped away. And I wouldn't want to see that in a crawl. You know what I mean? Like, that's the opening to this movie. That's the setup, is that opening scene. And I would much rather have that be shown to me than read it, you know?
Well, the opening crawl in that context probably would have been the backstory of the dad developing the Death Star and then leaving and going into hiding, probably.
Exactly. Yeah.
To be fair, I would have been fine with it either way. If they had a crawl, it would have been fine. But I believe their goal is to not have the crawl in any of the side films, only the main saga films. Mm-hmm. So.
I feel like a crawl in this one, if you're describing how Galen Erso designed the Death Star and then left, like that makes the whole story of him leaving a lot less personal. And that's everything this movie was, is incredibly personal.
Yeah. Yeah, this is your this is your grunt level story. You know, this is the, as important as he is to the creation of the Death Star, he's not, he's not a Darth Vader. He's not a Governor Tarkin. He's not one of the big shot callers per se. He's, an engineer, a designer, that's behind things, but you know what I mean? It's like, and then obviously the stories of his daughter and the rebellion and all that. And it's their personal story. It's, it's a story of sacrifice is the big thing. And that's really, whereas the main films are a story of heroics, their heroic saga, it's that classic template. So, and this is no less heroic, but it's not going to have the uplifting happy ending that people are hoping for. And I think that's another thing that's pretty jarring for some people is they expect something a little more upbeat at the end and they don't get it at all.
The heroes won. Why am I sad?
Well, that is the departure for me for a standard Star Wars film. A standard Star Wars film is basically everyone lives, except if it's to motivate the story to move forward, which in that case would be Obi-Wan Kenobi, letting down his guard and passing on to the Force to get Luke and them to move on with whatever they have to do, right? you can say Obi-Wan Kenobi was original Phil Coulson. there's your MCU reference right there. Matt, being the casual Star Wars fan, what is something you would pick apart in the film?
Huh. I honestly didn't really have anything to pick apart. I can't really say anything really bothered me. maybe this is small and it totally makes sense, so I don't know why I'm maybe the technology of hard drives in this universe seems
you beat me to it.
Like they've got space travel, but they're like the plans for a thing don't fit on a thumb drive. You have to have like a
reel to reel almost.
yeah, that was a little weird. Yeah. But like but it's consistent
sized hard drive.
Exactly. It's consistent with the technology in A New Hope, so I can't really complain, but it was a little silly. It just set up this Star Trek is accused of this too, like the whole like climbing around in the belly of the ship with like things swinging at you and like why would you build it like that? Why can't you just walk up to a cabinet and pick up the file? That was a little weird. Other than that, nothing really.
So what was your favorite part?
That everyone died. And let me explain.
Wow.
Let me explain.
It's my favorite Star Wars film because fuck Star Wars. Everyone's dead.
It's my favorite because not only did everyone die, but no one ever even mentioned that they were going to die, even though it was clear that they would. When the ship blows up and it registered in my brain that was their only way out.
Right. Yeah.
And they never acknowledged it. They were just like, we are on a mission and the mission is more important than us. And we're not even going to say that. We just all know it. And they just all kept moving forward and kept trying to get those plans regardless of their own safety. There was not even a moment. I could absolutely see a weaker script having a moment where they go, that was our last chance to leave.
Yeah.
We have to keep going. But they never even had that moment. And when I realized they were dying on the beach, the two main protagonists, when I realized they're dying on the beach, I was like, oh, they're not even going to really acknowledge that they're dead. They completed their mission and they're just falling in the sand. Like they're just done. They're not even trying to save themselves.
Yeah.
That ship sailed like 15 minutes ago and it passed without me noticing. Like I just loved it.
Dennis, what's your favorite part?
I would probably say that last third act with the beach warfare and the space battle, that's probably the best. I would definitely say it's the best space battle in any of the Star Wars movies.
Dude, they had a ramming ship. That's what that ship was built awesome. For. That was beautiful.
They call it a hammer, don't they?
The hammerhead. Yeah. Oh my god. That was so cool.
Get me a hammerhead Corvette.
Nicely done. That was a really good impression. What do you want to attack right now? What do you want to pick apart?
I would probably say the character development. I feel like they could have cut a couple scenes like that whole Darth Vader scene with the dad joke, whatever. That scene could have not been in the movie and it wouldn't have impacted anything at all. Like you could have basically focused on something else, like maybe a little bit more backstory on Jane Erso, or maybe explaining what Cassian meant when he said, hey, you're not the only one who's had loss. I've been doing this since 6.
Maybe
expound on that? Like what happened? That seems like that'd be interesting to know. I don't know.
I do think for a casual Star Wars fan, the only reason that scene is a little important is to set up the fact that Darth Vader is around so that when he shows up at the end, it's not just out of nowhere. But I agree with you. That was a little weird and out of place.
I also think it adds a little bit to the political climate on the Imperial side. It gives you an understanding that things are not as cut and dry as you would think they are, that there's it was done sloppily, but there's political intrigue on the Imperial side. Like Tarkin doesn't answer to Vader, but Vader sure the hell doesn't answer to Tarkin, and that there's still power plays going on, even with Krennic. And that gave us like the littlest glimpse of that. So.
No, yeah, I get that. I just felt like that time would have been spent elsewhere. More interesting things.
Yeah.
That Vader hip sway was pretty interesting.
Would you rather?
But I mean, they could have not had Vader in that, and like you said, to like set up that Vader's in the universe, and then just have his like, because at the end when that ship runs into Vader's flagship, they could have even said Vader's ship is approaching or something like that, and you immediately know shit's happening now. And then he comes in, and then that scene, you know, where his lightsaber goes on, and he just destroys that hallway of people. Like, that was the other thing I really liked. It stopped making Vader like a plush toy.
Oh my god!
And made him into like an actual threatening force to be reckoned with
that
again.
That could have been at least 10 minutes longer.
Yeah.
Holy
cow. Is that
cow.
What she said, Joss? Yeah.
But like the whole Jane growing up from like they barely touch it. They mention it, but like they show her in prison, but they don't really touch on why she's in prison. Why was she being transferred out of prison? Why were they using a ground transport to this thing? Like just a little bit more showing me how we got from point A to point B would have been a little bit better, I think, to establish like her character's, I don't know, motivations or sense of, you know, I don't really care about any of this stuff, that kind of thing at first. So that way when she does make the big turnaround, it would have been a little bit more like emotional, or you would have felt it a little bit more to me anyways. But that's just me.
I hear you.
Felicity Jones is actually the only star of this film that has a sequel option. And it's not really even a sequel, quote unquote, option. The running theory is that she's going to show up in the Han Solo movie, and that's going to explain how she got into prison.
That would be cool.
That would be pretty interesting.
That'd be a good way to bring her back.
Isn't that like one of the most heartbreaking things about this film is you're like, I kind of want to see more of these characters. Like,
give me Chirrut back. Give me Chirrut and way back. Please.
Did any of you guys have any trouble remembering their names by the end of the movie?
What names?
Absolutely not.
Like, okay. Well, I mean, like,
I didn't remember.
I didn't really remember Cassian's name or Chirrut or Baze or I remembered Krennic and I remembered Erso because they said the names enough. Sargeras a little bit, but the names just seem, I don't know, more complicated than like if you think about the original Star Wars movies, like Han Solo and Princess Leia, like the much simpler names. I don't know.
Lando.
Yeah, these guys they went also on Facebook when they were writing the script and they saw one of those like how to make your Star Wars name kind of thing.
The Darth Vader scene was the end scene was I was like, holy cow, that's what I've been waiting for.
They made him a big, forever. Imposing force again.
Oh, dude!
Right?
Just
right? Oh man!
Scary again.
He's throwing people up to the roof. He's deflecting a blast. He's catching bolts and throwing them back. I mean, oh my god!
He stabbed a guy. He ran a guy through with his lightsaber
and cut the through door the open.
Door.
Yes.
And then the door opens and gets sliced in half. Like, are you kidding me?
Oh my god!
What?
Honestly, I'd never call for a villain film. I totally watched the crap out of Darth Vader film.
Just, oh, dude, the Vader comic is so good.
You know. But Klotz, I know you have some favorite parts and some issues. Let's start with your favorite part.
Favorite part. Wow.
Well, just something to get you
absolute positive. Favorite moment is in the third act when the Rebel fleet comes out of hyperspace on top of the Imperial fleet.
Yeah, did you see it smash to another ship?
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when they first show up.
Oh, yeah.
And they drop in so close to the Imperial fleet. They're pretty much just right on top of them. And that, dude, I got such an adrenaline spike from that. And that's one of the things that I measure really good war and action films and you know, like, those are the ones that always stand out to me, is a film where if I get that fight or flight adrenaline kick because I feel the sense of danger, you know, that looming danger and the fact that this is real. If I feel that,
me clench in my seat.
Yeah, exactly. And that did. And I just immediately had this like, oh, whoa, you know, I had to like shake my head and like, oof, because I felt like I literally felt like I was in the cockpit of one of those starfighters and I was about to go smash into a, you know, Imperial ship because that's how close they were. I did love, you know, subsequently I did love the scene when Vader's destroyer arrives and that medium transport just turns into space dust instantly. one of my friends pointed out that Y-Wings are the Star Wars equivalent of kamikaze pilots. I don't at all disagree with that because watching them just slam into stuff over and over again was pretty amusing. Yeah, the third act is bar none one of the finest, you know, 30, 40 minutes of, you know, any film I've ever seen. The battles on the beach, seeing it the second time, they did a really good job of telling that story of like that guerrilla warfare. Like they land on the one pad, they start fanning out and they're like, you know, spread out, you know, make make 10 guys look like 100. Just like get out there and cause some mayhem, cause some chaos, get them to start reacting to you and keep them off of us. That was really cool. And that was one of those things that's so believable as opposed to a lot of films. You know, a lot of films, like, they just like the heroes drop into the thick of it. And it, like, actually, Force Awakens is kind of guilty of that. Like that scene, I forget the name of the planet, but the scene on the one planet where they're, you know, they're fighting and there's like the traitor line when Finn has to fight the stormtrooper with the baton and stuff like that. And then Poe comes in with his fighter squadron and starts sniping stormtroopers with his X-Wing. As cool and badass as all that is, it is a little bit ridiculous. Whereas this film, it felt like, no, this is guerrilla warfare. They're fanning out, they're causing chaos. And people are getting hit, you know, like, troopers are hitting their targets.
I was going to bring that up. The troopers get an upgrade for this film. They hit stuff.
Except for Donnie Yen.
Well, the Force is with him.
But they shot a lot of things.
That's the funny part. If you caught the one line when two of the troopers are patrolling and they're all sneaking up on them, they call out a line like, oh, did you hear the F whatever got recalled or whatever? That's actually, I had to look it up afterwards. That's a blaster rifle. Blaster. I think it's a tongue-in-cheek reference to how bad the blasters in A New Hope are and how they can't hit anything, I guess. So it was meant to be something like that. But yeah, no, that was all great. And Churro and...
Churret.
No, it's Churro. It's...
Weasleys!
No, it really is, because
we all have the power of Google. I don't know.
It's okay.
It's Churro. Churro is what my cousins and I eat.
Yeah. Anyways,
Chris.
Obviously, his big scene is like amazing. Like, he's great. Like, my favorite funny bit in the entire film is when they're being apprehended by the other rebel group there, and they put the hoods over everybody's head and they put it over his, and he's like, "Are you serious?
I'm blind. Yeah.
That was great. But yeah, no, his big sacrifice scene, like, you know, the whole, it's a meme already, but it's like, man, it's so good. And then, you know, his buddy going out and the subtext of that scene and everything, that was powerful. I mean, that was like, it was just, that was great. That is what I'm talking about when I reference like Band of Brothers. Like, you know, it's like that. It's like, you're watching people go to war with each other. And there's a real sense of loss, and there's a real sense of, at that moment in the film for that character, he doesn't care about the rest of the fight anymore. It doesn't matter, you know. I mean, he'll continue to fight, but it's like it takes all the wind out of him, and that was powerful. You know what I mean?
Just so that somebody so controlled gets so reckless.
Right. Oh yeah, dude. That's an awesome character too, by the way. Every time he let loose with that essentially
that heavy repeater.
Yeah, heavy repeater, man. Oh my god! Like, yeah. So,
all right.
Mads was good too. Mads Mikkelsen being in everything now and just being amazing and everything. I'm for it. I've been a fan of him for a long time. So,
what is it that you would like to take apart for the group now?
The first act is, especially on seeing it the second time, it's real spotty. We know that they did a number of reshoots. Well, actually, the third act suffers from it, too. There's a lot of scenes that we saw in the trailers and in promotional shots that never showed up in the film. Notably, there's a scene with Krennic standing in that shallow water with his cloak billowing out into the water with his death troopers there. That never happens. The closest we get to that is when the death troopers come out of the drop shuttle and start fighting back. I get a really big feeling that a lot of Krennic's lines and scenes were reshot because some of them feel really disjointed the second time through, including that Vader scene. I do agree that scene wasn't really executed the way it probably was meant to be. It didn't have the impact that I think they were going for. It could have been done a bit differently. So in the first act is just like you get that. The first part is great, you know, where you see Jin and you see her running through the grass to get back, and then you see the confrontation. All of that is good, but then you jump to her being in prison and it's just like you're just there, and then like it's very choppy there and they move very quickly and it's all kind of disconnected from.
No, I understand. I know we haven't done Phil. I don't think we've done Jeff. Have we done you yet, Chris?
Not yet. Go ahead and throw those guys.
No, that's fine. I just make sure I get my list here, and if I miss somebody, speak up. We'll go to Jeff. What's your favorite moment?
Oh, man.
See, nobody has an excuse. Nobody has an excuse to tune out because I'm not talking. And I get it all the time. Oh, Charles is talking. I tuned out. No, you got it. Klaus was just talking. Pay attention.
Man, no, I was paying attention. I was just so intent on listening to him.
Wow.
I was Charles so intent on listening triggered. To everyone else, but I didn't think of anything for myself.
He likes to actually listen and not just think of what he's going to say next. Like, he's a good listener. Jeff's a good quality listener.
Yes. Thank you, Matt.
Gives
we
good
just
back
get lost
rubs.
In your words, Charles.
I do give good back rubs. That's beside the point.
He does. Listens and back rubs. Our podcast nights are wonderful.
Are we able to schedule for tomorrow?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Jeff, you want to really come did. Over? You want a podcast and chill, Jeff?
She's done after dark.
All right. Turned into a totally different show. I didn't sign up for this. Yes, I did. Who am I joking?
You started the petition for this.
My favorite moment would I'm stuck between Chirrut Imwe's intro and K2SO's Last Stand, because Chirrut Imwe's intro was so damn badass. Like, there's only one lightsaber in this movie, and it belongs to the bad guy. So they have to make do with Chirrut Imwe. And
now you're talking about his intro where he called out to her, "Why are you wearing a necklace?" Or are you talking about when he first entered into the
peace. Let them pass in peace?
Yeah.
Where he where he shows up and basically daredevils the entire stormtrooper regiment.
Yeah, he did.
And like, that was just so incredibly awesome. And then we got Baze Malbus going, you know, right behind him, just taking out all of them. And then, you know, their quick and funny little exchange there of like, "You almost shot me." "Ah, you're welcome." Yeah. But then like K2SO's Last Stand, where, you know, I've never been sad about a droid dying. Okay.
Right.
Never. Ever, ever, ever.
Apparently, neither has Phil, even to this day.
Oh, he's awful. We'll get there, but he's awful.
But like, he's a droid. He doesn't have to make a sacrifice, but he still does. And he still is so focused on the mission, even though, you know, the chances of failure are high. They're very high.
Very high.
And he knows that. And he still gives up. I love both of those characters so much. I can't really decide on which is my favorite. So,
Jeff, I want to piggyback a little bit on what you talk, because I was going to talk about this later, but you've already segued into it. I feel like his death was powerful, but there was one missed opportunity there, and I really wish they would have given it to the Firefly fans. They gave me a hole in the chest, and I was good with that. And I don't know if that would have been too obvious. Like, they could have gotten and said, "I am tree matter on the air current for all I care." But you know something? It should have been done.
I would have walked out.
I would have
right? That's too much, man. Come on.
I probably would have walked out, too.
I mean, as much as you hated the Vader joke, you're going to go with that one? Nope.
Yes.
Nope.
Yes.
I would have been like a leaf on a wind and got the hell out of that theater.
Watch how I soar straight out.
Straight out.
I was kind of a little bit surprised that the droid's like call sign wasn't some variant of Leaf.
Leaf.
Like, yeah, just they would do that. You know what I mean? Like, I could see it happening.
L34F.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, he was, I guess most of us will agree that he was great, but some of us will not.
But some of us are wrong. You know, it's cool.
I love me a snarky droid. You know, like, C-3PO is probably my least favorite character in all of Star Wars. No, no. Take that back.
Jar Jar Binks.
He takes second seat to Jar Jar.
Star Wars?
I almost blasphemed. Well, it's because I barely consider the prequels like part of canon. I have my own headcanon of Star Wars, and they're not part of it. But yeah,
Jen survived, and we got married.
I love the scene right after that, the fight with the stormtroopers when the thermal detonator gets thrown at them, right before that when she turns around and shoots the droid, and he's like, "That could have been me."
Did you know that wasn't me?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course.
Well, and the great part about that is it was really well acted, because the look on her face was like she was a little upset that she had done it. You know, she was like, "Oh, Oh, Cassian's not going to like that.
Cassian's going to be mad.
Yeah, we're definitely not going on any dates after this. And then, you know, so.
Oh, did you mention that as if you're saying that there's a romantic subplot there? And a lot of people have said that there was and there didn't need to be, but I didn't feel like there was.
No, you got close.
There totally was.
I didn't think there was at all. I didn't think it was any romantic thing at all.
Oh, no, there totally was.
No, on the elevator going down at the end.
I'm sorry, do they not have force of the tongue at the end, right?
Well, here's the thing.
What?
Listen.
She is one with his tongue, and his tongue is with her. Come on, man. They kissed. Like, motherfucker. Come on.
They didn't kiss. They didn't kiss.
Close enough. There was a romantic subplot. There was a romantic subplot. Phil, what were you saying, man? What were you saying?
Well, no, I'm saying it was close to a romantic subplot. You know, you have that last scene where they're going down the elevator, standing nose to nose, but it never fully developed. They just decided no, and then let's go die on the beach.
Yeah, it would have felt forced if they had made them kiss.
So basically, in Star Wars, you're saying they got married, is what you're saying in Star Wars terms.
No.
But now here's the thing, though. There is a subplot there. You know, it's there. There's a connection, at least. But what I loved about it...
I would say there's a connection between the characters, but there's no evidence of romance, you know?
Well, I would say there's the beginning of the possibility of romance.
Well, no, that's... I really do feel... Like, if we got more time with those characters and they didn't get turned into space dust a few seconds later, you know, you would have seen the relationship develop a little bit further. You might even have gotten like a New Hope level kiss, you know, like the random type thing. Is there a kiss in New Hope? No, it's in Empire, isn't it? Anyways, doesn't matter. It's there.
There's a brother-sister kiss.
Yeah, no, there's some incest going on. In New Hope.
But the really important part about it is that it didn't jump to the let's make out part, because that would be unrealistic. You know what I mean? Like, there was a connection between the characters. There's definitely a romantic angle to it. There was tension earlier in the way they were talking to each other and stuff. You could tell that there's feelings. They both caught feelings, man. But
this was also a guy that wanted to kill her father.
But he didn't want to kill her father.
He was ordered to kill her father.
I mean, if he wanted to kill him, he would have. He had every opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you just snipe Krennic.
Right?
Right. Snipe Krennic. Right? Done. I know.
Game over. Well,
I think the logic there is that nobody at the time, I don't think any of them really realized who Krennic was.
That's fair enough.
And so he, you know, just killing an Imperial officer doesn't accomplish anything. Killing the engineer behind the Death Star accomplishes something, at least in their mind. Because to their perspective, he can't develop any more weapons, so on and so forth. But no, I mean, that's a big part of the story is Cassian's, you know, not happy about the things he's had to do, but he believes in the cause, and he's done what he had to do to get to that point. But then he realizes that just following orders isn't always the choice. But I definitely think he has feelings for her, and vice versa. By the end. But I was
kind of turned off to anything that he said or did when he like shot the one guy in the back at the beginning.
Which guy? Oh yeah,
bad arm.
Yeah, but that's like. That's one of the best parts about this film is because it establishes that the rebellion is not, you know, this holy crusade of just goodness.
Yeah, it establishes him as the Black Widow of the story.
Well, it establishes the whole rebellion as having a dark side to it. You know, it's not you don't get to rebel from an oppressive power by like, you know, with hugs and tea parties
and playing
it's
by
built on hope. Yeah, rebellion is built on hope, but the
hope
foundation
cocaine.
The foundation is laid with bodies shot in the back.
Well, Jeff, back to you. So you were talking about your favorite parts. I don't know if you want to talk more about that or if you want to start picking apart something you didn't like.
I don't think there was really anything that I greatly disliked other than the quick force of C-3PO, and I don't know, the exposition in the first act was a bit much. It was just like, it was really jumpy. Like, now we're on this planet, now we're on that planet, now we're on this planet. This planet means nothing to you, but we're here anyway, right. And you know the name of it because here you go. And I didn't need to know the name of the prison internment camp planet. I didn't need to know that name. I might later after like the Han Solo movie, maybe, but It's unlikely. I don't know, that's okay. Too much info is and too well, much too much yeah. backstory that is unnecessary. You know,
it's just an unnecessary planet and an unnecessary scene jump. You know, you could have put her on Jeddah.
And yeah, she could have been on any planet in prison and freed by K2 and whoever else he was with.
Sure.
Although that intro of K2 was pretty funny. Congratulations, you are being rescued. Please do not resist.
Oh, no, he totally WWE's her, right? He grabs her by
her slams her into the ground.
Bam! Congratulations.
He catches her in midair.
Welcome to the rebellion, punk.
Yeah. Like, you're that's not even the hazing. That's yet to come. You're about to be jumped in really hard.
Listen right here, brother. You are joining this rebellion.
You know, honestly, I think Phil and Dennis might have left the theater, but if he had given an yeah, right then, I would have laughed so hard at that moment. And then they're like, oh, your humor chip's broken. Let's fix that. You know,
but anyway. I was thinking about how painful a wedgie from K2SO would be.
Chris, because we're really Phil for the final detriment of the robot.
We're gonna end on a sad note.
Chris, you did talk about a little bit of what you liked. Is there something else you want to talk about you liked, or you can start deconstructing?
Two things really stood out in the movie. As far as my favorite parts, the Vader scene at the end. I commented that I never realized how much I needed or would enjoy ceiling murder until I saw that scene in a movie.
That's our new t-shirt on BTP. I enjoyed ceiling murder. Yeah.
It was so good. And then just and I know this is a point of contention with people in the film, but I was in love with what they did with Tarkin and Leia in this movie. The graphics were so good. And every time Tarkin appeared on that screen, I said it out loud that people behind me were getting annoyed. I know it because I said, "What the f-?" Every single time, because it was so good. It was so uncannily good.
You're that douchebag, huh?
They actually took me out of the movie, those scenes.
Really?
Yeah, I thought, typically I'm usually catching on to CG pretty easily, but I thought the motions were a little plastic. Like, in long doses, I find it to be too distracting, and it takes me out of the movie a little bit. I probably would have been fine if they just put a different actor who looks and sounds like him in the movie. Like, it wouldn't have bothered me at all. I'd been like, okay, it's Grand Moff Tarkin. Like, whatever, move on, DDD. But he actually had more scenes in this movie than he did in the movie when he was alive.
Well, and see, they had a guy that looked like him underneath. My thing is, when we say, you know, get somebody that looks like him, I get too worried that we're going to go back to episode 3 and that horrible thing that they made up to look like Tarkin. That's where I get taken out of the movie, is when they're on the bridge of the Star Destroyer looking at the construction of the Death Star, and that was the Tarkin we got.
Yeah, well, no, that was terrible CG, but that was like a decade ago or more. Yeah.
Right, and I don't even know that was much CG as just bad makeup. Like, that may have been the only practical effect in episode 3.
Oh, I thought that was a CG person. I didn't think that was makeup.
I thought, because Klotz and Wisdom both kind of doted on that Grand Tarkin, which is going to be amazing. So I think maybe I knew going in had I been surprised, it might have taken me longer. There were, I partially agree with Dennis and I partially agree with Chris. There were moments like, that is spot on. And then there were some moments that my brain couldn't quite put my finger on what was wrong, but something was a little off in some moments for me. But overall, I thought it was a great gamble that they did. It allows you to carry that canon through without, you know, no offense, but without botching it. You know, it's oh, we cast this guy we think looks like him, but the rest of the Star Wars universe thinks he doesn't, you know. I don't know. Chris, but
I felt like he moved his face too much to be that person, that role of Grand Moff Tarkin. Like, when we see Tarkin in A New Hope, he barely moves and he's very stoic. But it seemed like in this movie, he was just like his head was swinging all. He was Davy Jones.
Yeah, he was a little too animated.
And now we're leaving the theater. Thanks, Matt.
what did you not like, Chris?
Obviously C-3PO and R2, but we've probably killed that horse over and over. Some of the just
It was all little things. For me, the space battle, when the Y-wings roll in and they run that X-wing barrage against this AA defense platform, and my Y-wings are the tanks of the Star Wars universe and the Rebel fleet. They have better shielding. They're built better. They are bombers meant to destroy. And when they sent them in dead last after losing X-wings, like, as soon as that first wing of X-wings went in, and I'm in the theater going, send in the freaking Y-wings, you idiots, blow the guns up. That's their purpose. So yeah, a little teeny, you know, it's a little tiny nitpick.
I think we found the nerd of the group, though.
Yeah, yeah, obviously.
I really just took issue with the military strategy.
At the end, the core of this movie, and I think it's why I gravitate so much to it, is, I mean, this, you know, we've said Saving Private Ryan. I described it as we were soldiers. The easiest way to look at this is, I mean, Abraham Lincoln said it in the Gettysburg Address, that these people gave the last full measure of devotion. I mean, that's what you want out of a war movie, is the characters that can make you feel that, understand that, and feel for them and their cause. And that's what it did. And I think if Travis was here, I'm sure he'd back me. I think what, Charles, you're reading as the romantic plot line is just what you see a lot of times. And this is why my bros in arms and I get accused of, you know, so much gayness, is because when you're in high tension situations, you know, your feelings are put on edge. Every emotion you feel is raw, and it's hyper. So there's things out there that, you know, from the outside looking in, you read a little too much into, but it's, you guys are, they were at this peak of emotion, and then they get brought down real quick, and you have a chance to sit back and reset and see what's happened, and take stock of all of that. And I think, I'm not saying that there wasn't, but I don't think it was as evident as you think it was from that context. And right. And I'm sure that you'd seen that as well on EMS calls, Charles, when you and your partners are in a high pressure situation.
Yeah, man, we do that CPR, then we make out like mofos.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's what most of that relationship is.
All right.
And the patients are like, can you continue the CPR? Yeah. Like,
you're supposed to breathe into the patient's mouth, Charles, not your partner's.
Yeah. Well, like Dennis said before, I didn't tell you to stop. So, Phil, what's your favorite part of the movie?
My favorite part about Rogue One is probably everything set on Jeddah, from the marketplace ambush scene. Where it shows Cassian being a little bit the grittier side of the rebellion, but also that whole entire battle as a whole, and everything with Saul Guerrera. I wish we were going to get more with Saul Guerrera in this. I know he will be on Star Wars Rebels and other, you know, extended universes, but I just, everything about Jeddah, I was just totally into.
Cool. Saul Guerrera was one of those things I was kind of talking about that seemed kind of disjointed. The impression I got early on was that we were supposed to get a lot more scenes with him, and we just didn't. And
I felt like those were a lot of the reshots or the recuts, is where they took Saul Guerrera out.
Yeah, like you never talked about what will you become.
Well, one of the trailers, there's a scene where he and Jyn are fighting together, and that, you know, obviously that never happened in the theatrical cut of the film. So, like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that must have gotten changed there. Because I kind of felt like, why is Forrest Whitaker in this movie? Because
they could have put anybody in that part.
Yeah, it could have been just any guy off the street, honestly. You know, so that kind of sucked. But yeah.
Not everybody can play crazy like Forrest Whitaker can, though.
It's really, you know.
My favorite response after people saw the film was, that movie was so good, it gave me Forrest Whitaker.
Now, see, we got a new option now. You got Forrest Whitaker breath. You rip the oxygen mask up. Take a big snoring breath.
Little mouthpiece.
Right. He takes a huge snoring breath and goes, you come to kill me. Well, now you're pretty much there, dude. We're just saying hi. That's all we're here for.
Hey, he's really like a low rate, like second tier Vader at that point, isn't he?
What do you mean? He's the leader of, you know, the rebellion Taliban that controlled Jeddah.
Yeah,
I completely forgot. when I was watching the movie, the only thing I'd think of every time he took a suck off of that was Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet. I was just like, oh, stuff's about to start getting extra crazy on Jetta.
So, Phil, why do you hate?
Why are you hating?
Why do you hate? Is it because he's black? I don't understand. You're racist?
No, come on.
Okay, just check it. I don't understand. God. I'm just trying
to. It's not the reason.
I understand why K2 is there. I understand exactly, you know, he's there to break the tension of this really heavy film. But it felt like to me every time I was about to fully commit into it, I get these one-liners from K, was it K2SO?
K2SO, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, I think he even dropped a, I have a bad feeling about this at one point.
He did, and they told him to shut up immediately.
Yeah.
Our theater groaned when he said that, actually.
And
well, that was a reference, isn't that like in every Star Wars movie someone says that?
Yeah.
I know. It's just
another reference. Yeah.
And you know, just always, I felt like, I don't know, he was trying to be kind of like Drax, where he kind of has these quippy one-liners, but just wasn't good enough one-liners like they gave Drax. So, and I know, I understand I am the only person nationwide who saw this movie that hated K2, but
it just, you like Drax, so there's that one redeeming quality.
So you were cheering when he died of a hero's death?
It's not that I wasn't cheering. It just, it really didn't
kill that son of a bitch, died or not. Dumbass droid.
I say that scene was very interesting to me, where he's holding up, because every Star Wars film, right, the characters live. And I saw the movie poster when it came out. I went, okay, looking, just in my mind, it popped out. Looking at the grouping, these people die, but the way these are set off, maybe they don't die. You know, because they never said in alluding to this story that everybody died. Right, they said that for the second Death Star. Was it many Bothan spies?
Whatever,
you know, yeah, that. So throughout the film, yep. I'm watching him go, okay, I expect a certain number of people to die, but I kind of expected the girl and, I don't remember any of their names, but the girl and her love interest and his robot to live.
Oh, my God.
And it wasn't.
Now, why are they making movies for these people?
That's the next Brazzers parody.
It really wasn't until the ship blew up and went, oh no, man! They're gonna take them all down. I mean, when they took out K2, it was very interesting. But I could not see another way around it that would make sense, right? Is they're coming in and he's blasting a few. I thought it was going to be the Han Solo scene, only one or two soldiers come at a time. When they started sending four or five, then I knew that was done. And, you know, that's
now, isn't it rumored that it originally everybody was supposed to get off the Scarif, but the rewrites and the reshoots changed that?
I don't know.
Well, yeah, there's some rumor that there was a more uplifting original ending, and I forget which side of it wanted. I can't remember if it was the director or the writer, or if it was Disney / you know, Kathleen Kennedy and all of them that wanted to go a different way with it. Basically, there was an original idea. They scrapped it. They went with what they got that we saw. But yeah, I don't know who exactly would have been on the chopping block or not. I feel like. Like kind of Charles, like what you were saying there, mm-hmm. with those two, I think the idea might have been that those two would have gotten away, kind of thing. Right. But I don't see the rest of the team getting away. Right, I see them as being your, you know, your likable,
your red
and relatable,
shirts, if you will.
Yeah, not quite red shirt level, but pretty. Right, you know, your special guest star that you know you'll never see again. You know, that's the kind of thing.
Well, yeah. I watched the very first trailer and then I avoided every trailer since that. And basically I thought before the movie, I even went in not really knowing anything about the movie. I figured everyone's going to die in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like I just kind of figured no one's making it out of this. This is a standalone movie. They don't want anybody to live anyways, because, you know, could be spinoffs or things like that. I mean, from a financial standpoint, it makes more sense for them to have characters for spinoffs, but I didn't think they were going to have anything open-ended or anything like that. I thought, since this was supposed to be a contained thing, I thought everybody was going to die before I went in, so I wasn't super surprised or all that, you know, emotionally torn when they all died in the end.
Well, honestly, and you call me cold-hearted, but I wasn't emotionally torn on any of it, really, because to me it was downplayed. Like, okay, Forrest Whitaker's death was anticlimactic, whereas the graphics were phenomenally amazing. I mean, they essentially Star Wars nuked the planet, and you get to see this. Oh, dude, okay, that's my love of this movie. My number one love of this movie was the physical graphics and all of it. You get backwash from the planes or whatever you want to call them, the starfighters, the transport pods, all of it. Landing and taking off, you get that backwash to the point that they actually use it to almost knock what's-her-face off the platform, right, when he was, when he was leaving. Yeah, that. So
her dad must be really heavy.
I was thinking about that when I saw the second time.
Yeah, it didn't quite all make, but yeah, when they Death Starred the city and you just see this terror wave, right? Because it's like a tidal wave, but it's all Earth, and it's just. But it was also downplayed at the same time because Forest Whitaker's just like, yeah, you know, my time is done. You go, like, that's that. This needs to be more epic, more Obi-Wan Kenobi moment esque. Not well, that's I'm not gonna make
that's
it.
That's definitely that whole reshoot scenario, I think, because that seems so like phoned in. You know what I mean? That
yeah,
like, what, this character is supposed to be important. This character was important to Galen. This, you know, and to Jin, like, that's the thing. Saw Gerrera is so important that, you know, Galen trusts his daughter's life with him. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, after he knows that this was all pre-planned. This was an eventuality that they were prepared for, that, you know, somebody like Krennic was going to show up and, you know, take him back in, and they had a plan. So for me, like, for him to just have this tiny little bit part, for him to effectively be her foster father, you know, for X number of years and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, why, so casually discarded was kind of frustrating.
Yeah. And all the deaths were, I mean, even K2.
Well, I think the later deaths all had their appropriate level of purpose. Like, K2 did his job and, you know, he was holding on, you know, he sealed the vault.
Well, no, I think it's appropriate. I just kind of felt like he was downplayed. It wasn't like, oh my god, they killed him. It was like, oh yeah, okay.
Well,
yeah, it's his time now.
Yeah.
Shira and Baz, though,
those were close to as climactic as you got.
Oh, dude, I cried bro tears. I'm not gonna lie. I was all even the second time, and I knew it was coming. I was just like, it's so beautiful. They're just
those
so
were the
beautiful.
Only deaths I cared about.
Now that was a great scene when. I'm stuck on Churro. I thought it was a great name. When Churro, he picks it up and he starts saying,
okay, to be fair, it's Churro. I screwed up.
It's close. I'm not mocking you. I think it's great.
I dropped the T, okay, in my mind.
It's the only name I remember from the whole movie.
Well, you definitely wouldn't order a blind man at a Mexican taco truck.
I don't know.
But, so whoever the guy with the heavy repeater, right? When he goes to his friend, you know, the blind man who died, and he starts saying the Jedi prayer, basically, and he starts walking through. I'm like, oh, he's gonna. There's not that many attacking at that time on that beachfront. I mean, they're moved to somewhere else. I thought, all right, he's gonna make it back and something. And then no, that was the most meaningful death scene in the movie, I think. Sure.
See, and this brings up a good point to what I was talking about earlier, because I've seen this going on the internet. So why are we not talking on this show about the romantic relationship between Chirrut and Baze,
or the
possible romantic relationship?
It's hard to say. Well, because the thing is it's not overt. You know, it's not.
I think that, especially that final scene, that's every bit as overt as what we were talking about with Jin and
well, that's
that, and that
like
could
what,
be. I mean, that
it's what you were kind of talking about, though, Chris. Like, you
no,
know,
absolutely, yeah. That's the point I'm making.
Is it a moment of brotherhood, or is it a moment of, you know, years of just unacknowledged,
Well, you don't know. Maybe
it was genuine love and affection between two characters. We don't know.
I mean, they did play it so well. You have no idea that you can't tell if they're, like you're saying, they're bros from back in the day and they fought in this war together. You don't know why they're together. And
well,
honestly, it could be a couple. You don't. What? Okay, fill me.
Well, what I was going to say is, you definitely know that they're bonded by the fight, by the struggle, because they were both former protectors of the Jedi temples.
Right. And, yeah. You know, right.
So they're bonded, and you know it's hinted at that I can't remember how it's pronounced.
Baze Malbus.
He was once devout. It's said at one point.
He was once the most devout of the
Right,
Brotherhood.
The most devout. Exactly. And he wasn't anymore. He had lost his faith. And that's what's so beautiful about that scene, though, too, is because, like, the one who is filled with faith the whole time, he goes out there, he's chanting the mantra because he knows he's not coming out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's heavily implied that he's at least force sensitive, if not, you know, I mean, he's not a Jedi, but he's pretty close.
I mean, he outright said the force moves darkly around someone who's about to kill.
Exactly.
So he can feel and or see it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so he's force sensitive. He has faith and he commits to that action knowing what the result is going to be. And then, you know, yeah, I don't know if it was romantic love or if it was just the bond of, you know, years of, you know, being really close, tight knit, you know, having been protectors together and having fought the fight together. You know, it's hard to say, because if it is a romantic subplot, it was beautifully executed because they don't beat you about the head and face with it. They're just here's absolutely. Two people that love each other and it's beautiful. And, you know, I think leaving it up to interpretation is good, though, too, because, you know, you can feel like, all right, that's beautiful in that way. And you can also respect it as the bonds of brotherhood and understand that as well. It's beautiful in both ways. And I think it's probably a bit of both, to be honest. Yeah. And that's fine.
It's awesome. Like Cap and Bucky if Cap was blind.
It's also a bit of a shout out to the idea that not all like there's relationships where there might be romantic love there that's never necessarily like physically acted on too. So that's another thing as well. So it's beautiful. That's why I get all choked up, man. It's just like those two men love each other, and I don't care what label you want to put on it. It's apparent and it's beautiful. You know,
we don't care how offended Matt and Jeff are.
All right. So we are running long. Actually, wow, we're at 2 hours now. So here's the thing. So the finalizing graphics, when they were just doing the space, you know, obliterating things in the space dust at the final battle, but when they shot the destroyer and it all went blue, I thought those effects were great. And then their power's gone. I was like, they have EMP bombs? I didn't know they had EMP bombs in Star Wars. I don't recall that.
Ion disruptors, buddy. Yeah.
Well, I've heard the name. I don't recall ever seeing them used.
On Hoth, the big ball gun that would shoot at the Star Destroyers. That's what that was. It was an ion cannon.
All right. I never quite put that together, but I didn't go, oh, wow, out of cannon. No, I thought that's cool. And then, because I was thinking, how stupid are you in tactics? You're shooting the gate when you should actually be shooting the gate generator. And then sure enough, they pushed that ship through like a knife. And was just glorious. And the other glorious scene besides the terror wave and that, there's so many little things that are amazing. But I can't remember which one of you were talking about how they made 10 men look like 100 and they're going around. But when they set off the bombs and you're up in the control tower with everybody and you're seeing it happen, that was just beautiful. That was amazing.
Are we blind?
Yeah. Move. that was and a lot of little things were great. Like
a little bit of a shout out to some of the classic stuff that was done, like that opening, the opening right after the you know, Rogue One title screen comes up and the U-wing is coming in across the rings on that planet, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was such a classic old school sci-fi shot, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know anything that's going on. Just look at this spaceship going through space. You know, it was beautiful and awesome. The other thing is, they recycled a lot of unused cockpit footage from A New Hope.
Yep.
Using original pilots.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. The version of it I've heard is that basically they went to Skywalker Ranch and they were like, what are all these canisters of film in this one room? And they're like, oh, that's like leftover stuff from A New Hope that was never used and blah, blah, blah. And so they went through and they cleaned it up and they used a lot of that stuff to attach some of those characters as being at that battle as well as being, you know,
which is
in
genius.
The later battle. Yeah. It's awesome.
It's really good.
Can you imagine being in that vault? And they're like, what's that stack over there that says unaltered New Star Wars? No, nothing. That's not an unaltered version on film of Star Wars that you could release on DVD. It's definitely not that.
All right. So, you know what? We all enjoyed the movie. We definitely had our ups and downs, but I think we'd all agree it was a really good film. It held up to the Star Wars standards. I think Klotz said it best when there's no reason to ever think that Disney's going to screw this up. I mean, they've done really well with number 7. And then Rogue One. I had to count it because I know as soon as I say the wrong number, everybody's going to scream at me and then blow my planet up with a Death Star.
Yeah, you got to. It's important to remember the number of the Star Trek movie you're talking about. I'm sorry that I'm stupid.
No. It was just you McFalled it up, man. That's all I can say.
I know. I love that you embrace the fact that McFall is our Brita ing it up.
Is this before or after Generations? I can't remember.
Wherever it lies, it is the best prequel out of all the prequels.
It's true. Yep.
Yeah, there are other prequels.
It's a low bar. It's like pistol whipping a blind kid.
And on that note, Botch, tell us who you are, where we can find you, and how we can listen to your show.
You can find us at botchpodcast.com or wherever you get your fine podcasts. And we are at Botch Podcast on Twitter.
And we are glad that you have joined the Giant Size Team Up Network. You guys have brought an awesome perspective to this discussion, and you're really fun to listen to. And I can't get enough of it. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
Interrupting the hell out of you over and over.
that's my job.
Well, to be fair, when your main point is I hate K2SO, we should interrupt you every time.
Yeah, no, it's all right. I knew going into this what I was in for. Bunch of assholes.
And fair enough. Jeff and Matt, Jeff being the second biggest nerd in this group, apparently, to Chris Wisdom. Tell us about MCUcast, how we can find it, all that jazz.
MCUcast.com and pretty much MCUcast everywhere else. Check us out. Oh, you know, there's lots of spiels to be done. I don't want to do our whole spiel, but yeah, Facebook, Twitter, email, everything. MCUcast. Just look us up. MCUcast.com.
Interesting fact, they were the first show that we signed to the network outside of what we had created ourselves. And so you guys have been with us the longest.
We called it the Helicarrier Network.
Yeah, we did. Man. Back when we first had the idea for it. And again, you guys have brought some weight and in a good way. It's not a fat joke to anybody. I knew y'all were going to give me grief.
I'm working on it.
I knew you were going to give me grief. I mean... We like you. Man, shut up.
It was Christmas, okay?
Don't feel bad. I'm eating gummy bears after this. Like, nothing but gummy
bears. And Chris, tell them where they can find Breaking the Panel and all that jizz.
Over at the GSTU Network, GiantSizeTeamUp.com.
That's it right there. Of course, Klaus has been with us since day one, and Chris Wisdom is very close after that, and we'll do a great show every week with Breaking the Panel. We're glad to host the roundtable here, and unless you got any last words that haven't been said, I think we're gonna jump out. Tune in next week to hear Paul Klotz say
boldly go something.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.